Good evening again. The second half of this talk, then, is how the church is being manipulated into the globalist view. Again, that's what we're trying to show in the dialectic process, is where it came from and where it's going, because the people who are performing the dialectic process will not tell you that. Very interesting statement. Not only who said it, but when it was said. The state must socialize every group. Men must learn to have world patriotism. World patriotism must be a faith. There is no more justice for the claim of absolute sovereignty on the part of a nation than on the part of an individual. The only alternative is world federation with a world parliament, an international court, an international police force. Men must have an international mind before there can be a world federation. They must see and affirm that above the nation is humanity. Internationalism must first be a religion before it can be a reality and a system. This was written by the American Baptist Publication Society in 1919. This has been going on for a while. This is a spiritual battle. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Prophecies from the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation talk about a coming one-world government and a one-world religion and a one-world leader who has all power. How will we get there? I believe we will get there through the diaprox, a new way of thinking. It's better we disagree than be in agreement and all be wrong. I don't know this person, J. Kestner Kahn. I don't know whether this person's a Christian or what their beliefs are, but I have to agree with this. I agree that it's better we disagree than be in agreement and all be wrong. And that is what the diaprox is. The dialectic process is everybody being in agreement and everybody being wrong. On the small scale, the dialectic leads to group harmony. On the large scale, it leads to world harmony. The humanist manifestos, they deny creationism. Embrace evolution. They assert that religion evolved via interactions between man and his environment. They deny the supernatural. They believe that the physical death is the end of life. They recommend social and mental hygiene or mental health. We'll get into that. They discourage the hope found with God. They encourage hedonism. They recommend the transformation of religious institutions into conformity with the world. They recommend worldwide socialism. They assert that traditional religions are harmful to man. They want man to achieve his full potential without restraints. Remember, no boundaries, beyond all limits. They assert that salvation comes through mankind. They reject pure capitalism or communism. They embrace communitarianism, a merging of the two. There's a synthesis and of a thesis and an antithesis. That's also known as reinvented government. They advocate the free exercise of sexuality. They insist upon rights of birth control, divorce, and abortion. They insist upon the rights of death with dignity, euthanasia, and suicide. They advocate democracy rather than a republican form of government with decentralized decision-making. They advocate separation of church and state. They embrace multiculturalism, advocate world law and a transnational federal government. They advocate world peace and the elimination of all wars. They place a high priority on preservation of the environment, and they state that the central task is the quest for the good life. Basically, they believe in heaven on earth. They think that all of those things can be achieved and everybody can get along and live in harmony and live in a utopian paradise without God. That is not true. Can't happen. Because man is basically not good. The deception of change, again, any point in time, the management team only needs to know enough to take the next steps towards achieving its goals. Again, Rick Warren stated, pastors are probably the most underrated groups of change agents today. George W. Bush called religious leaders agents of change in human events in February of last year. In that same article, he said, "I hope this country is on the verge of a religious revival of all faiths." He got a taste of that on 9/11, didn't he? Religious revival of one of the faiths. Discipleship. Again, he says, Rick Warren says that's moving from church-building programs to this people-building process. Peter Drucker says this: there's an enormous need to build, I call it the person. Rick Warren says, be willing to let people leave the church. And I told you earlier the fact that people are going to leave the church no matter what you do. But when you define the vision, you're choosing who leaves. You say, but Rick, yes, they're the pillars of the church. Now, you know what pillars are. Pillars are people who hold things up. And in your church, you may have to have some blessed subtractions before you have any real additions. We have to get rid of the barriers. I thought he didn't weed people out, but then here he says that when he defines the vision, he chooses who leaves. The key issue for churches in the 21st century is church health, not church growth, he says. Now he contradicts himself. He says we do get a lot of unhealthy people at church because society is getting sicker. But Jesus demonstrated that ministering to hurting people was more important than maintaining purity. When you fish with a big net, you catch all kinds of fish. Now, 1 second ago, he was saying he believes in church health. Now he says it's okay for the church to not be healthy. How do we resolve this apparent paradox? Well, he's touting church health, and it all depends upon your definition of health. Well, healthy churches. Health includes mental hygiene. We saw that in the Humanist Manifesto. This is the United Nations and the World Health Organization's definition, and it's brainwashing. G. Brock Chisholm, previously quoted today, the first head of the World Federation of Mental Health, eventually headed the World Health Organization, and he said, the only psychological force capable of producing these perversions is morality, the concept of right and wrong. The reinterpretation and eventual eradication of the concept of right and wrong are the belted objectives of nearly all psychotherapy. All of this therapy that's going on in the small groups is all geared toward eradicating your concept of right and wrong. And it all fits. We have healthy start, healthy people, healthy kids, healthy families, healthy communities, now healthy churches. Becoming Healthy Church. This is recommended by Rick Warren, Bill Hybels, Bill Bright, Jack Hayford, Leonard Sweet. 10 characteristics of a healthy church. Bottom line is, we may have a personal faith, but we can't have an individual faith. We can't be Christians by ourselves. That's what they say in that book. The Search Institute ties this all together. They actually tie the World Health Organization's definition of mental health with healthy churches. They have resources on healthy communities and healthy youth. They have a prescription for a healthy church. All kids are our kids. And beyond the village rhetoric, creating healthy communities for children and adolescents. So what is this mental health? It's sustainable thought patterns. We're talking about sustainable development. We're talking about saving the planet. Sustainable development is not polluting and is saving the planet. Similarly, mental health has to be achieved on a worldwide scale in order to save the planet. In other words, we can't have unhealthy thought patterns. We can't have people that cause divisiveness. We can't have people that cause wars. We can't have those rotten Christians telling people that they're sinners and need to be saved. Warren Bennis dreamed of a university that would teach students how to end all war, diminish pollution, and banish racism. G. Brock Chisholm says the people who have been taught to believe whatever they were told by their parents or their teachers are the people who are a menace to the world. Dr. Chester Pierce, an educator, says it's up to you as teachers to make all of these sick children well by creating the international child of the future. TNet International talks about philosophical purity that must be maintained at the leadership level. Is this brainwashing? Again, change and transition are not the same. Change is an event, something that happens. Transition is the emotional and psychological processing of the change. And remember, the belted goal of all psychotherapy is the eradication of the concept of right and wrong. TNet International, you can't make disciples without accountability. You can't develop a helpful accountability system without a structure. This is the role of church leaders. You have to have this accountability group in order to create healthy Christians. Again, Bill Hybels, we spoke about. After 9-1-1, October last year, he brought in a Muslim cleric to look at his perspective and to have dialogue at this church. This was reported in the Chicago Tribune. Hybels says, there are some Americans and some Christians spreading rumors and half-truths that the Quran encourages violence. Well, you take some stuff out of context and we've got major problems. He's trying to create understanding between the faiths of the world. 9-1-1 was the result of the Quran encouraging violence. Listen to what happens to his church members. His church members buy into it. I didn't know they believed in Jesus, a church member said after the service. They do believe in Jesus. They believe he was a prophet and that he was less than Muhammad. But that's not the message that this so-called Christian took home when she left Hybels Church that day. The Washington Times reports on clergy who met with President Bush. He met with 27 interfaith clergy who urged both patience and justice in America's response to terrorism. The entire clergy group then finalized a consensus statement before meeting with the president in the Roosevelt Room. These people who signed the consensus statement were Franklin Graham, Luis Palau, Bishop Gordon B. Hinckley, he's the bishop, the head of the Mormon Church, Bishop Charles Blake, again, the black pastor from South Central LA, Max Lucado, James Merritt, who's the president of the Southern Baptist Convention, Bishop T.D. Jakes, who's actually a oneness Pentecostal who does not believe in the Trinity, Bill Hybels again, Catholics, Hindus, Buddhists, etc., all joined to sign a consensus statement, meet with the president. The Interfaith Alliance, this is really a wild group. Not only do they have representatives from Episcopal, Muslim, American, African-American Baptist, Church of Christ, Southern Baptist, Unitarian, Jewish, First AME, AME, United Church of Christ, Buddhist, Catholic, United Methodist, Tao, Theosophist, Zoroastrian, Wiccan, okay, they have witches, Salvation Army, Animists, Baha'i, Southern Baptist Convention, Shinto, the Metaphysical Church, just incredible numbers of churches that a lot of them, which you would think were mainstream, like the Southern Baptist Alliance, Lutheran, Mennonite. Again, back to Robert Schuller. Here he meets with one of the assistant pastors at Rick Warren's Saddleback Church. This is Lee Strobel. Strobel was one of the assistant pastors at Willow Creek. Now he's bounced over to Saddleback. They're still tied together, Warren and Schuller and Hybels. Again, the 2001 Institute had Hybels speak there. Again, London from Focus on the Family, John Maxwell, the money guy, Luis Palau, Charles Blake, a lot of these guys who were also at the interfaith meeting with President Bush. Focus on the Family Institute exists to provide a unique Christian educational community that nurtures passionate and persuasive leaders who are committed to Jesus Christ, equipping them to promote healthy families, vibrant churches, and a civil society. Again, they're recommending healthy families. And the civil society, who else talks about the civil society? Well, this is a publication from the United Nations. Whose world is it anyway? Civil society, the United Nations, and the multilateral future. Clarence Thomas said, by trying to be tolerant and non-judgmental, that is, we censor ourselves. This is not civility. It is cowardice or well-intentioned self-deception at best. That is a beautiful statement. Silence is not civility. Cowardice. Here's another gentleman that Schuller likes to meet with. Met with him in October of 2000. Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev says, I am not ashamed to say anywhere in public that I'm a communist and believe in the socialist idea. I will die believing this and pass the end of the next world believing this. Schuller says, I know that he calls himself an atheist, but 11 years ago, as one of the most powerful men in the world, God used this atheist in a mighty way. That was when he allowed Schuller's broadcast into the Soviet Union. The reason is that he knew communism had nothing to fear from Schuller's broadcast. Schuller to Mikhail Gorbachev, he says, you claim to be an atheist, but I don't believe you. You're not an atheist. You keep referring with such respect and affection to Jesus Christ, and anyone who respects Jesus Christ cannot call himself an atheist. Schuller's just redefined Christianity. This was at the Gorbachev State of the World Forum in September of 2000 in New York. There was a United Nations conference, and there was the Gorbachev State of the World Forum. And they had this invitation sent out: you are cordially invited to join us in daily meditation. And it's got symbols of Hindu and Buddhist and Jewish and Muslim, etc. God is love. By the way, this is the dialectic God, God of love. If you take away Christ and his judgment and only teach his love, he can get along with all of the other false gods that are out there. That's what they boiled it down to. This is where we can have unity of the faith if we all believe that our God is a God of love. But that's not the whole story in Christianity. He's also a God of judgment. Again, what fellowship has light with darkness? You know, come meditate with us. No, can't do that. The United Religions Initiative is also headquartered in the Presidio along with Mikhail Gorbachev's office. There's an interfaith chapel there. They partner with UNESCO and the European Buddhist Union, and they sign their charter at Carnegie Mellon University. Once again, Bob Buford, who's tied closely with Peter Drucker. Again, interdependence, the stage where we realize and accept that we cannot accomplish anything significant on our own. Kurt Lewin defined interdependence as continuous help from each other as opposed to help from a benevolent despot. In other words, humanism. If we all help each other, we don't need help from God. We don't need the benevolent despot. Again, this is community or gestalt, and the sum is greater than the parts. Peter Drucker, again, born in Austria in 1909, still working. Again, he, along with Tom Patterson and Bob Buford, helped Rick Warren found Saddleback Community Church. He specializes in organizational management, strategy, and policy. He works with large corporations, small entrepreneurs, U.S. governmental agencies, and free world governments. He's best known for his humanistic approach to business management. He changes as the world changes. Supposedly, he's a Christian. And that's his own provost at his university. So what is Peter Drucker's view of the world? He believes in human strengths to counter human weaknesses. The science of discovering these strengths, fitting them into a productive framework, is what he calls management. And his school says, we believe in keeping with the Drucker philosophy that management is very much a human enterprise. Again, he's humanist. And he says, the nonprofit sector is where management is today most needed and where systematic, principled, theory-based management can yield the greatest results fastest. Why? Just think of the enormous problems facing the world. Poverty, healthcare, education, international tension, and the need for managed solutions becomes loud and clear. The only way that we're going to solve all of the problems of the world, the economy, healthcare, education, international tension, religious division, is by getting people in small groups and dialoguing to consensus until everybody gets along. He's going to do that to your nonprofit organization, i.e. your church. 1 Thessalonians 5, but of the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write unto you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. Peace and safety. Go to the website of the United Nations. You will see peace and security. Sudden destruction will come upon them. Drucker traces this modern management philosophy to Mary Parker Follett. She says that understanding comes out of conflict. Same thing. Thesis, antithesis, you get conflict, then you get understanding, synthesis. Elihu Root, he was Teddy Roosevelt's Secretary of War. He was also Andrew Carnegie's legal advisor. Frederick Winslow Taylor, John D. Rockefeller Sr., J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, Werner von Siemens, Pierre S. DuPont, Alfred Sloan from MIT, we keep seeing MIT pop up, and Henry Ford. A lot of big movers and shakers in the world are the people who founded organizational management. What do these people have in common? How about wanting to rule the world? Leadership Network. Their vision is that the church will be effective in the transformation of individuals, lives, communities, and the world. They want the church to be involved in this change of the world. Community. The congregation is on a journey to discover where God is active and join with Him in His work, both locally and globally. The United Nations says this all the time. Think global, act local. You'll see that all over the place. They identify missional impact. They identify itself as part of the larger expression of God's presence in the community, city, and the world, and they pursue interdependence beyond traditional affinities. And their previous literature had talked about ecumenism, business, management, and marketing. So again, they are going crossing outside lines of Christianity and becoming interdependent with non-Christian organizations. The Church Champions portion of the Leadership Network has a document called Let's Hear It for the Deviants. Who are these people? These are the No Boundaries people. You're deviant. You went outside the boundaries. And they also recommend another book, and listen to this, Comrades, Brothers, Fathers, Heroes, Sons, and Pals. Comrades. Speaking of Beyond All Limits, this was a conference that was in January in Orlando, Florida, put on by Bill Bright, Beyond All Limits, All of These Boundaries. Maybe we'll talk about it later. Peter Senge also has a pastor's conference called Exploring Off the Map. You know, going beyond the boundaries. It's the same theme. So anyway, I mean, I thought this was pretty bold. They recommend a book entitled Comrades. And Dave Travis from the Leadership Network says it's a great book. Though Comrades is a story of male friendships, I'm happy to comment that one of my comrades and friends here at Leadership Network celebrated her 6th anniversary on our team. I don't know if you really want to start calling each other comrade, but sounds a little too familiar to me. They also recommend a Leader's Handbook, a guide to inspiring your people and managing the daily workflow by a disciple of W. Edward Deming, the founder of the Quality Movement. They even admit it has a little bit of a New Age feel, but it has good exercises, good things to say, and workable exercises. So we don't mind the fact that these books are New Age, because they still have, we're just going to take out the good parts. They also recommend Leading Change. Leading Change is a completely secular book, talks about anybody that's not conforming, how you get rid of that person. And then they also recommend Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits course. Covey's writings pop up all the time in this type of literature. Covey's a Mormon, okay? He's not a Christian. So why people are taking his counsel and trying to structure their lives around his counsel is beyond me. This is him. He organized Gorbachev's State of the World Forum back in September of 2000. He was the organizer of that conference. This is Stephen Rockefeller. He is the co-author, along with Gorbachev, of the Earth Charter. Stephen Rockefeller says, in this new ecological age, new age, of developing global community and interfaith dialogue, the world religions face what is perhaps the greatest challenge that they have ever encountered. Each is inspired by a unique vision of the divine and has a distinct cultural identity. At the same time, each perceives the divine as the source of unity and peace. The challenge is to preserve their religious and cultural uniqueness without letting it operate as a cause of narrow and divisive sectarianism that contradicts the vision of divine unity and peace. In other words, we've got to set aside our differences for the sake of the group. It is a question whether the healing light of religious vision will overcome the social and ideological issues that underlie much of the conflict between religions. And he's the chair of the religion department at Middlebury College. The Church of Small Groups, that first book I told you about, they say they have made our church one where we could lead together toward a common vision of an ever more inclusive community, an ever more inclusive. The church is going to get a bigger tent, wider and wider, broader and broader. In fact, and remember I said, anything that's not unifying is sin. We must run persistently against all that destroys community, divisiveness, fear, pride, and self-interest. The Earth Charter, again, written by Gorbachev and Stephen Rockefeller. This is a meaning of an Earth Charter. It's written in a book by Prince Charles. And what is why do we need an Earth Charter? Above all, it's important to devise the means to shift political values and social behavior to an extent that it is to be hoped will turn mankind from being a colonizing and occupying species into a co-evolutionary companion with the majesty of creation. This is the true meaning of the Earth Charter, and this is probably the most important message underlying the words of Prince Charles. A general declaration of Earth rights must be translated into national constitutions, codes, and law of binding international commitments. The environmental movement is becoming part of a much more fundamental process of social, ethical, and political transformation that is just beginning to sweep the globe. Tragically, only even more serious crises, sufficiently widespread in their economic and military repercussions, manifestly to affect the interests of the wealthy, will be necessary before a proper Earth Charter comes into force. People think Prince Charles is just this nice guy that rides ponies. He's up to no good. They also, church champions also recommend the equipping pastor a systems approach to congregational leadership. We heard a lot about systems approaches. Training turnaround leaders, systematic approaches to reinstating growth in plateaued churches. And this is described as probably the best written work of Senga systems theory applied to churches. Peter Drucker and Peter Senga have worked together, leading in a time of change. And remember, actually, Deming, who is given credit for being the founder of Total Quality Management, actually refers back to Senga as where he got the majority of it. Here's Drucker and Senga together. Peter Senga, here it is, the Leadership Network Conference, Exploring Off the Map, again, going beyond the boundaries. He is also tied to Tibetan Buddhism through the Shambhala Institute. Systems thinking was also presented at the Gorbachev State of the World Forum 2000. It was a conference there. The Shambhala Institute, again, authentic leadership with Peter Senga, Margaret Wheatley, and Francisco Varela, joining collaborative learning and meditative insight. Now, why is the church basing anything on Peter Senga when he's talking about collaborative learning and meditation? Shambhala Institute, Leadership Practices for Enlightened Society. It's a nonprofit organization that supports positive change in organizations, communities, and societies by bringing together the practice of meditation with the best of organizational disciplines. The Institute is inspired by the Shambhala tradition as originally introduced to the West by Shogram Trungpa Rinpoche, who emigrated to the U.S. in the early 1970s after having been trained as a Tibetan Buddhist tulku or previously enlightened teacher. He had another life. When encountering a culture fascinated by spirituality and the exotic traditions of the East, Trungpa Rinpoche warned about the dangers of spiritual materialism and focused on the down-to-earth practice of mindfulness, awareness, meditation. Rinpoche also introduced a vision of enlightened society in which communities and organizations nurture, protect, and proclaim human goodness, wisdom, and dignity. Such a society is supported by practices of mindfulness and awareness and is pervaded by loving kindness, a sense of inherent wealth, not truly wealth, and profound appreciation of interdependence. Over the past years, individuals in the Shambhala and the learning organization communities have been exploring common ground. There's been a lot of spark in this exploration. This is the divine spark, by the way. As language and cultural barriers are crossed and possibilities, what can be, are uncovered, The Shambhala community brings to this meeting its deeply rooted inheritance of Shambhala Buddhist wisdom and methods. The learning organization community brings its practical and transformative insights, networks, and practices. When brought together, these two streams have the potential to deepen and sustain organizational learning while providing a vehicle for meditators to make their inspiration and vision manifest. Another group that talks about Shambhala is the worldwide activities of the Lucius Trust, formerly founded as Lucifer Trust, founded by Alice Bailey and Foster Bailey, and they are dedicated to establishing right human relations. Here is human relationship building again. The teachings of the Tibetan master Zhuo Kul, given in the books of Alice Bailey, make it clear this was a spirit that she channeled. They make it clear that humanity itself must first produce the conditions in consciousness and in world affairs essential to the eventual physical appearance of the Christ. This is not our Christ, folks. The Christ will be known by the work he does, by the world influence he wields, and by his ability to work with and through every individual and every group who have trained themselves for world service. And they say that Shambhala, then, is the center where the will of God is known. It is the energy which brings about synthesis, which holds all things within the circle of the divine love. 2,000 years have gone since Gethsemane and since Christ made his initial contact with the Shambhala force. Did he meet a good force in the garden, or did he meet a bad force in the garden? It should be carefully borne in mind that evil is much closer to Shambhala than it is to humanity. I don't think it was a good force. Since it's the Shambhala force's impact during the past few years, human thinking has been more concerned with the production of unity and the attaining of synthesis in all human relations than ever before, and one result of this energy has been the forming of the United Nations. Shambhala has two subsidiary effects or qualities: the destruction of that which is undesirable and hindering in the present world forms, in government, religion, and society, and the synthesizing force which binds together that which has hitherto been separated. Go along with this or be destroyed. True Christians will be considered undesirable and hindering. The dynamic impression which emanates from Shambhala reaches forth in great cycles and cyclical waves. These are impulsed from extraplanetary sources as demanded or invoked by the Lord of the world and his associates. They emanate in response to the acclaimed will of Sanat, which is an anagram for Satan, Kumara, in the council chamber. Peter Senge, he also taught systems theory to the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome, again, published this book, Limits to Growth, basically saying that we have limited resources on the planet and we've got to do all of these drastic moves in order to save Mother Earth. Young Leader Network. They rolled up their sleeves. They began the task of breaking down the old paradigms. Paradigm is a worldview. So the old paradigms of ministry. We have decided how to approach ministering in our present postmodern transition, and now it's time to construct the church of the future. So we broke down the old church. Now we're going to rebuild it with a new church. But Francis Schaeffer said, in a post-Christian world and in often a post-Christian church, it's imperative to point out with love where apostasy lies. We must call apostasy by its proper name. Folks, this is apostasy. Leadership Network, they talk in the spiritual gifts assessments, they talk about organizers, people who like to organize. Those are people who like to create order out of chaos. The whole dialectic process is order out of chaos. You get synthesis from thesis and antithesis, you create chaos, you end up with order. The Freemasons also understand order out of chaos. This is the symbol of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry. And right at the bottom of the double-headed eagle's tail, it says Ordo Ab Chao, order out of chaos. The Masons intend to take over the world. They intend to do it by the dialectic process. Robert Schuller actually has ties with Norman Vincent Peale. Vincent Peale was a well-known 33rd degree Mason. You can look on any Mason website that talks about famous Masons. Just hit a word search for famous Masons, and you'll find Norman Vincent Peale. He is. There's a statue of him over at Schuller's Leadership College that he has down there in Orange County, and Vincent Peale is very much instrumental in Schuller's ministry. Was instrumental. He's passed away. Other seminarians, Richard Mao, the president of Fuller Theological Seminary, Howard Hendricks and John Reed from Dallas Theological Seminary, all promoting this process, Kenneth Meyer, Trinity International University, Elmer Towns, Liberty University, which is Falwell's group. Falwell actually wrote on the inside cover of Rick Warren's book, an endorsement. Richard Mao, again, the president of Fuller, he supports multiculturalism and diversity. He said, he supports the rights and benefits for committed same-sex domestic partners, but believes the sacrament of marriage should be confined to heterosexual couples in the Judeo-Christian tradition. This was when there was a debate over Proposition 22 in California when they were trying to give the state giving domestic partnership to benefits to same-sex partners. He was in support of that. He just didn't think that they should be married. He was also involved in this conference put on by the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club is tied to the United Nations. I'll show you that later. They had, again, Buddhists, Hindu, Jewish, Richard Mao, the president of Fuller Theological, all of these people working on the quest for world peace. Other people promoting this, see Peter Wagner, again, the Church Growth Professor, ACMC, Advancing Churches in Missions Commitment, Campus Crusade for Christ, Habitat for Humanity, Prison Fellowship International. These have NGO status with the United Nations. They are non-governmental organizations with status with the United Nations. Now, some might think that that means that they're just trying to influence the United Nations for good. No, there are rules to get that status. The rules to get that status is you have to apply to the United Nations for that status. You have to sign a paper that says you agree with and support the UN Charter. You have to prove that you have a large information network, that you are able to reach a lot of people with pamphlets, flyers, whatever, newsletters, etc. Once you have been accepted, you have to agree that you will promote pro-UN activities. You will feed that back to your membership, and you have to maintain that status with the United Nations. You have to then give that information back to the United Nations on a regular basis to prove that you are actually doing so. So these people don't get on this list by accident. There's like 2,000 organizations that are NGOs affiliated with the Department of Public Information of the United Nations. You can download that from their website, and these people are all in it. Campus Crusade, Habitat for Humanity, Prison Fellowship International. Now see, like Habitat for Humanity, a lot of good people and a lot of good churches have been, you know, building homes for the homeless with Habitat. What they don't realize is every donation, 10% of that goes to the international fund. And that's where it's the local level don't know what's going on. And they think they're doing a nice thing by building houses for people. But the main leadership of that organization is pushing for worldwide equity, and that's what their whole goal is shelter equity across the world, and that's part of the United Nations goal. Southern Baptist Convention is also a UNDPI NGO, so is World Vision, and other organizations that are promoting this whole process, Youth for Christ and Youth with a Mission. Also, the Lucius Trust, also known as the Lucifer Trust, has an NGO. It's called World Goodwill, and that is in the same status as these other organizations. Ted Engstrom, the founder of World Vision, he's been on the board of directors of Focus on the Family for 19 years. He's close friends with the founders of Zondervan, and he's the former president of Youth for Christ International. He was the interim president at Azusa Pacific University. He's well known in Christian and management circles, former president and CEO of World Vision, and now he's the president emeritus. Again, the World Vision is one of these UNDPI NGOs. They also, World Vision, founded the Evangelical Environmental Network. The Environmental Network is a member of the Interfaith Partnership for the Environment. They are listed in Earth and Faith, a book published by the United Nations, and they were represented at the Gorbachev State of the World Forum in September 2000. This is that book, Earth and Faith, and they are listed in that book by the Interfaith Partnership for the Environment. In that book, they also encourage your congregation. A couple of things that they recommend: plant trees to combat high levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, or organize cleanup days or tree planting ceremonies. He was the interim president of Azusa Pacific University. Here it is, first day of school. Azusa Pacific University freshmen clean up the city. Some picked trash, some planted trees. Here he is hanging out with his buddy, Peter Drucker. Here he is also in the early days of Billy Graham's ministry. Back in 1973, the Humanist Manifesto said, in order to deceive Christians into secular humanist thought, the distinction between the secular and the sacred can no longer be maintained. Youth with a Mission states, we make no distinction between the sacred and the secular. Zondervan Groupware has the Participant's Guide to Halftime, so you actually have a workbook now in changing your life from success to significance. In other words, halftime being transition, this workbook will help you do that. Josie Bass, they have the core values of passion, teamwork, authenticity. Core purpose is develop healthy and responsible leaders, communities, and organizations. And they train, publish training materials for that. Josie Bass also publishes a Vision Retreat Facilitator's Guide, Change Agents series for groups and organizations, training and human resource materials. This is the same group that's in partnership with the Leadership Network, and they also publish The Tao at Work on Leading and Following. Back in 1995, the Leadership Network told us what was going to happen after church growth. Church growth was just a stepping stone. Governance, that's world government. Sustaining our planet, that's the environment. Freedom from want is wealth equity, and renewing the United Nations. The summary is that basically these are the problems that face the world today: overpopulation, environmental crises, food and shelter crises, health and wealth inequities, gender inequities, misguided nationalism, philosophical differences that cause wars. This is just repackaging of the Humanist Manifesto. If we can solve all these problems, we can have nirvana on earth without God. So they recommend population control with family planning, abortion, and homosexuality. Homosexuals do not procreate. So if we encourage homosexuality, we've solved part of the population problem. Just a few rich ones hire David Crosby for sperm donors, but that's different. Environmental, they recommend corridors. They recommend high-density housing and then corridors of transportation between those areas of high-density housing, and the rest of the earth is allowed to breathe, okay? We're going to go into that. These high-density housing areas are going to be areas where you have walking, you're in walking distance to all your needs: supermarkets, movie theaters, and also where you get your health benefits, etc. They will use the church facilities for those things. That's what we're going to get into. Food and shelter for all, health, wealth, equity, gender equity, and abolition of nationalism. And then they are going to be preaching tolerance and ecumenism. This is Agenda 21. This is smart growth, and it talks about basically, rather than spreading out and jumping, building, and redeveloping land into areas that are already cities, rather than jumping to the next valley and moving on to new ground. And again, this talks about the corridors, it talks about the high-density housing, and in fact it says in Pasadena, California, he cited the large housing development at Ambassador College and the 200 million Paseo Colorado, a project that will include multiplex movie theater, 400 upscale apartments and lofts, shops, restaurants, and a Gelson's market, all as examples of good planning. That's right, good planning, because you don't need your car anymore. You can just walk to all of your needs, and when you need it, to go to a bigger trip, you can take public transportation. This was also reported in the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, The Unfinished Agenda. This is basically the same thing as limits to growth. It's just we haven't yet achieved, you know, the environmental controls and everything that we need to. Peter F. Drucker Foundation, in partnership with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, put out this, Emerging Partnerships, New Ways in a New World. This is the third way government. It's the same thing. Third way government is a partnership between private and public in order to achieve the common goal. This is reinvented government. It's also known as fascism. And there are also going to be public nonprofit partnerships. That's where the church is involved. See, public-private is fascism. Public and nonprofit, that's where the church is utilized. Way back when, I told you that in the church growth churches, one of the things that they did was they made the churches unchurch-like. They took out the stained glass, they took out the crosses, they took out anything that would make it look like it was religious in nature. There's a reason for that. Clinton said it was okay for them to use church facilities and partnership with them to use those as classrooms because we had a classroom shortage. And so they partnership, the government gives the church money. The church then gives them a classroom. However, there are rules. They ensure that all activities and programs provided by the groups are purely secular. They select student participants without regard to their religion. They tell volunteers not to pray with students or preach about faith. And they recommend that schools put an agreement in writing and make sure any space used for teaching is free of religious symbols. They've already sanitized the church before the government came into partnership because if the pastor told the congregation, we're going to partner with the government, he insists that we remove our crosses, the congregation would say, forget it. If you've already removed your cross for another reason and you're already in compliance with the government, you're ready for the partnership. And Bush is doing the same thing. He recommends religious and private programs getting federal money. And again, same types of rules. Buford in Halftime says, many churches are adding volunteer resource directors. Remember the spiritual gifts assessment and finding out what you're good at? Well, it's also, now you're going to be using those spiritual gifts for your community. And they have volunteer resource directors or linking teams in Dallas. They recently launched what they call Linking Program, which has developed more than 2,500 different placement opportunities for service. This is the volunteerism that is being so recommended. See, basically, you're going to be database. With all the databasing, how much gas do you use in your car? How much food do you eat? How much land do you use? How much stuff do you put in the landfill? How much do you give back? So your volunteerism is also going to be charted. Are you giving back to the earth more than you're taking? People that are taking more need to be dealt with. The church of the 21st century is reforming itself into a multifaceted service operation. The community needs a community center, Peter Drucker says. I'm not talking religion now, I'm talking society. There's no other institution in the American community that could be the center. Another example, the Windsor Village United Methodist Church in Houston, Texas, has several tax-exempt entities related to housing, job training, employment, medical and dental services, and educational ventures. This is all back in 1995. This has been going on a while. Willow Creek in South Barrington, Illinois, is in partnership with World Vision, a UN NGO, to create Vision Chicago in an effort to link Willow Creek with urban ministries. And Summerhill Neighborhood in Atlanta, Georgia, was founded by a partnership of churches to revitalize Summerhill into a vibrant, growing, and self-sustaining community. I mean, they even used back in 95 the term sustainable community. And they have established a medical center, low-cost clothing store, daycare center, and housing and rehab program. So the environment will have community, there will be community centers to solve that problem, food, shelter, health, equity. This is the first century church model that a lot of these churches talk about. They basically try to convince you that the first century church was communism. They basically say they sold everything and gave everything to each other. No, it didn't. It said they sold things and gave things to others as they had need. And it also said that they traveled from house to house and worshiped together in houses, so they obviously owned houses. Dioprox then will lead to national and religious tolerance. We will put away our differences and our moral absolutes for the sake of the world, the greater good. The overall paradigm shift is from patriarchal Father God to matriarchal Mother Earth, or Gaia, as was mentioned. Hierarchical leadership becomes decentralized. However, in a crisis, it becomes totalitarian. And accountability to God becomes to accountability to fellow man and Mother Earth. Interesting question here. Jesus says, "Shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth?" And that is the question. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? There's not going to be this worldwide revival that a lot of people are talking about. It's not predicted in the Bible. So again, the challenge, if you're in this type of church, if you think you're only going to use the good parts of this process, please reconsider. There are no good parts. A little leaven leavens the whole loaf. You may be in the transformational mode of thinking. You might be justifying why it is. You don't have to attend to the facts. And you must remember, change cannot happen unless you first let go. And that's why, again, we need to stand and stand fast and hold firm. And we're to separate ourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. We're not to be unequally yoked with these people. Whosoever transgresses and abides not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. If there come any unto you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. For he that biddeth him Godspeed is partaker of his evil deeds. Now, if you know these missions groups are tied with the UN NGO and 10% of your money is going to go towards this global vision, you are bidding them Godspeed. And so you really need to consider where your giving is going. I'm not saying don't give, believe me, but just find true people that have true need. There's plenty of opportunities to give. You just don't have to give to these organizations that the leadership of these organizations has ulterior motives that are not beneficial for the church. Again, thank you very much.